With Leah McConnell. It is May the 19th, 2006. Leela, let's just go back like we did with Henry and talk about history in the late 40s, early 50s, and remembering how you came to come into the art world and your career and your painting and how you kind of got started.
All right.
Go.
One of the things that's of interest to me is that when I was 6 years old, we came to Houston when I was six, and I was at Montrose Elementary School in the first grade, and we had done some watercolor paintings on yellow paper, that crinkly old yellow paper, and it was all sort of pink and blue, and the teacher put them up above the blackboard, and then one day she was pointing out something, and she pointed to one of them, which was mine, I thought, and said it was somebody else's, and I said, no, it was mine. And she said no, and it was the first time I ever encountered injustice, and I am still painting what I call sky paintings, and I don't know if that's related or not, but I think it may be.
And signing them.
Yeah.
So you're not for sure.
Well, I didn't. In the early days, I didn't. And then occasionally I'd put my name on the back of the paper, but I didn't date them. And so now I know a lot better than that to do that.
Well, when did you go? Did you go into school studying the art?
No, I didn't. When I was a senior in high school, I went to the museum and took Robert Joy's class.
Mm-hmm.
But I was 16 years old and very silly, and I was going to teas and coffees every Saturday. And so I really don't remember my experience with him, but I did take his class. And I, my mother always, anything I wanted to do, sewing or whatever, she would see that I had the supplies to do it.
Uh-huh.
And so people say, when did you start? And I said, well, I never did. I just always did it.
Well, how do you remember Houston and the art scene in the 50s?
Well, we all knew each other at the museum, and we had a group that the museum provided a room for us, and we traded, we swapped paintings, and that's, you know, how we got other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the CAA came along, and so we all worked in that also.
Well, that was a pretty vital, ongoing effort for
a long time.
And did a lot of the Houston community come to the CAA openings? And
oh, yeah, it was wonderful.
It was a big play happening.
You know, in those days, everybody dressed up, and they were fun to go to, and you saw everybody, the artists and the people who were collecting and all that, and everybody knew each other.
Houston was small.
Yeah.
And dressed up in the 50s, that would have been heels and dresses, sometimes hats. I think I've seen some photographs of an opening, and ladies had little hats on.
Yeah. I don't remember ever wearing a hat, but I've seen a photo. Well, I met Mildred Dick, who was then Dixon. She's Sherwood now. I met her there, and Stella, well, I've known Stella from Rice, and let's see. Lowell Coggs taught a class, Robert Prusser taught a class, mm-hmm. Miss Euler taught a class, Francis Skinner taught a class. So I studied with all of them.
Dad, did you go to Rice?
Yeah.
Did you study art?
No, they didn't have an art department.
I didn't think so.
No, I studied architecture. I would have studied art if they had had an art department, but I studied architecture, and I never regretted it because I thought it was a really good background for art also.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Chilman was my greatest influence.
Was he?
Yes,
absolutely. Tell us about him. What was he like?
Well, you know, I mean, he taught, the first thing I remember is freehand drawing, which is where you draw with charcoal and you're looking at a plaster cast. And what you're really doing is learning to see,
mm-hmm.
realistically.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day crying. Because it was so hard. And, you know, he could be really kind, but he was the professor, you know. He wasn't, he was a friend in a way, but, you know, he was the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had art history, architecture history, watercolor design, and the freehand drawing, all from Mr. Tillman. So, you know, I consider him as the greatest influence on me as far as taste and design sense and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was half the time at Rice and half the time he was the head of the museum. I graduated in 48 and 49, a BA and then a BS in architecture. And I had taken a year off, I think in 1946, just because it was so intense and everything.
I mean, Henry was mentioning, you know, where Ben DuBose, and he feels that Ben was probably about the first gallery that he could remember.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, the paint store and first Buttes, and he was head of the Buttes.
Mm-hmm.
And the gallery. He started the gallery there.
Where did Houstonians buy their art before that?
I have no idea.
Maybe just from local artists, yeah. Or else they went to New York or something, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, we had the CAA had art rental and the Dallas Museum had art rental, but that's
later.
Later, yeah, mm-hmm. Much later.
Mm-hmm. And they would rent. You could go rent
a painting. Yeah, for a very nominal fee. And then, you know, if you wanted to buy it, then what you had paid to rent it applied.
So you could test it out.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
And paintings were inexpensive in that day. I look back at some, I kept cards on my paintings and, you know, what some of them sold for.
Well, it's relative, though. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
Things were cost all of us a lot less in those days. Well, let's see. The do you remember, in looking back at the 50s and 60s, was there any kind of a pivotal or important thing that happened that made the arts surge forward, the visual arts, or was it just sort of a gradual progression?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Just a slow, sort of southern, humidified maturation.
Yeah.
What do you remember about some of the artists?
Well, Mildred, when I met her, because she was a little bit older than I was, and she said, I called her Mrs. Sherwood for one time. This was at the museum class. She said, for God's sakes, don't call me that. Call me Mildred. And Stella and I were good friends, and Bill Condon, he came back to Rice after the war, and so he was sort of, he had a car at that time, and so, you know, he'd pile as many people as wanted to in the car, and we'd all go out to lunch and things like that. And
I never knew him.
He was really a very remarkable person, and he lost both legs in the war,
mm-hmm.
Stepped on a landmine. And, but he never made you feel bad about it or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
One time we were sitting around and talking about how much we weighed, and he said he weighed 115 pounds, and I said, well, that's ridiculous, because he was 6 feet tall or so. And he said, not without legs. That was the way he said it, you know.
Now, did you show with Ben DuBose?
Yes. When in 1960, I guess it was 66, he opened the new gallery, his own gallery on Kirby. And so that's when I went with him.
Had you been with someone else?
I had been with Polly Marsters in the Houston Artist Gallery,
mm-hmm.
when that, down on Main Street, mm-hmm. in that building, when
mm-hmm.
she had the downstairs place on the left hand side, the Handmakers was on the right.
Yeah.
That was sort of a wonderful thing of its time also.
Handmakers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize Polly Marsters had had a gallery.
Yeah.
Until Henry just mentioned it, too.
Yeah. So that was, yeah, the first person that I was with.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Polly closed, Mrs. Cushman asked me if I'd come to that gallery. And so I did until I think they closed.
And then went over to DeVos?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you remember Ben as a person?
Well, he was always bright and happy and full of life and look what I've got to show you and this is the way he treated the customers. And he was, you know, he kept you going also because so-and-so wants something of yours. And so, yeah, he was a great catalyst.
For everybody.
Yeah. Right.
Do you think the gallery, the DeVos gallery, changed after he died, or did Stanley kind of carry it the same?
Well, Stanley was much neater than Ben was, and Ben liked to, you know, stack paintings on the floor so that you could kind of go through them and find something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Stanley was didn't like that sort of thing, and everything was much neater and on the walls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanley was really nice, but he wasn't the outgoing person that Ben was, and I don't think he quite had the rapport, you know, with the artist. And then when he, you know, died, his wife had two little children, one a four-month-old baby and one a 2 or 3 year old, and so she tried to keep it open for a little while. And
well, you know, I went and talked to her about becoming involved with the gallery.
Did you?
And she and I talked, and Stanley had some other investments, and he wasn't taking a lot out of the gallery, per se. And I was, at that time, making more money as an art consultant than I could running DuBose Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided not to pursue that. Then Ellen Pinner came. And I think David Addicks told her to call me. So she called me and said, I'm going to buy DuBose Gallery if you'll come be president of the gallery. I don't know if you all know this.
No.
So I had 4 months of negotiations with Ellen. I became president of DuBose Gallery. We got it opened and redone. I had a National Academy of Design exhibition come in for sort of this new opening of works from the National Academy. We had a big flower painting show upstairs. And Ellen and I lasted 4 months.
Well, the story of the demise of the DuBose Gallery is an interesting story, and maybe for another time, because unless you have anything to add to that story.
No, I don't.
But after the DuBose Gallery, then what did you do with your work? Did you go with the new gallery?
I did. I don't know what the time lag was on it, but I went with Leslie Mews. And I had I think I had a couple of shows there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good for a while.
She had a good gallery.
Yeah, she did. And she was very interested in what she was doing and knew what she was doing. And then after that, I've never been with a gallery since then.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you started... When did you know you were an artist? Before you went to architecture? Or did it just unfold?
I guess I never thought of myself as anything else. But there's a point when you're in school and studying and everything, you know, sometimes people are perpetual students.
Mm-hmm.
They never decide that they are an artist or a painter. And somehow or other it has to click in your mind that, you know, you're through with school and you know what you're doing and you're not dependent on anybody else for what you're doing.
When did that click in your mind?
I don't know. Maybe I always had it.
I am an artist.
No, because I never liked anybody to paint on my paintings or touch them. And Frances Skinner would work on people's paintings. And you know
what?
Yeah, and I sort of wondered what I would do if she tried it with me, and she never did.
That's unusual that someone would come and paint on top, paint over a painting?
No, just to show them what the painting needed or something, a few strokes or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But I never wanted anybody to do that to my painting. It was mine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well,
some young artists today would be horrified if someone came and put a few strokes of their opinion of how something should be.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, things were much more realistic in those days.
Well, were you always painting more or less atmospheric in the sky? No, what was
See, my background at Rice was very realistic, and I could paint anything that I could see, and so that's the way I started out.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1949, I went to the California School of Fine Arts in San Francisco for the summer term,
mm-hmm.
and I had planned to go to Stanford, and when I got out there and went there, I just thought, this looks just like what I've been doing at the museum, the work that I saw there,
mm-hmm.
and which was realism. And so then I visited the California School of Fine Arts, and boy, it was built around a courtyard, and they were having a student show. And the paintings that I saw there were, you know, not that I hadn't ever seen abstract paintings before, but I mean, here it was just everything, and I thought, this is where I need to be. And so all the famous California painters were teachers there.
Stephen Korn?
Yeah.
Was he teaching then?
Uh-huh. And Mark Rothko came out for the summer term. And so anyway, when I started, I was in Rothko's class, I had painted some apples, and it was a white background and green and red apples, and he said, why don't you do another painting and abstract that? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, do flat patterns of color. So that's what I did. I did another painting, and I've still got those two paintings.
You had to see them side by side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that experience of just that couple of months was what I wanted and needed to shake me up a little bit. And then it wasn't until 1960 that Henry and I went to Europe, and I fell in love with the stucco walls in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started doing all the fuzzy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've always had, I think partly it was my architectural training where a sense of space was important to me, and even when I was doing a still life, the space around it, or if I was doing a portrait, the space around it was always important to me. So I've always been interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And rooms are important. The shape and the size and how high the ceiling is and
mm-hmm.
how it makes you feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, this house is a marvelous house, and you have these intimate nooks and crannies. A home is layers.
Yeah.
It's like an onion. I said to people, you know, you peel that or put together, but it's layers and layers and layers if it's really a home.
Yeah.
And it has the lifetime of thought and interest. What else do you think would be important to share about anything that you remember, about any personalities, or about, you know, how Houston was?
Okay, Frank Telesco.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought he was a really fine artist. And, you know, a lot of people thought of him as being bohemian and stuff like that, but he wasn't. He was a true artist. He and Prusser were great friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when the CAA opened, he was the man that hung the shows and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but decided how they were to be hung and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, then he had a good sense of space and perspective.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Right.
He was doing that. That business.
Yeah.
Did you have classes ever at the museum school?
Yes. Well, when I was a senior in high school, I told you about
right.
that. And then when I was between my senior and postgraduate year at Rice, I started taking it to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember how long it was, maybe a couple of years. And then Miss Euler asked me if I would teach. And She was a great but quiet influence also. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know how to teach. And she said, yes, you do. You can do it. And so I taught from four-year-olds through adults in different classes. And I must have done that for a couple of years.
What was she like as a person, Ruth Yulbar?
Well, Henry always said she was like a ship in full sail. Yeah, she was an imposing figure. I don't really think she was that tall, but she had the big high hairdo, and, you know, she was an imposing figure. And, you know, she would come into a room, and you knew she was there.
Uh-huh. And how was she with people? I mean, was she accessible?
Yes and no. You know, it was sort of like what I was trying to say about Mr. Chilman, which I didn't say very well at all, but they were really good and kind and, you know, wanted the best for you, but they were remote in a way, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that with her. You can almost even see that in her, in the photographs of her, that a little bit of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I know she was great friends with Grace Spaulding John, a couple of portraits
are
really marvelous.
Yeah.
Marvelous.
That one, that the big one that the museum has, is one of the, mm-hmm. the two of them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I said that she was my teacher also at the museum when I was there, but she was.
Well, that was wonderful that she wanted you to go on and teach other people too.
Yeah.
It was a good experience.
Yeah.
How did you find that experience of teaching?
I enjoyed it, and the class that I liked the best was the 4 and 5 year olds, because they were so full of life and everyday life and very talkative, and it was just fun. And with the children's classes, we always did also, besides painting and drawing, clay work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would fire them, and then they would put the glaze on them, and then we'd fire them again. And
was that a Saturday class, or was that after school?
After school.
After school class.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was in the 50s?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else can you think about that was interesting at that time that sort of characterizes what was going on? Was there ever a pivotal time in your career where you had sort of an aha, or kind of, this is what I need to be thinking about, or anything like that?
Well, when I went to California that summer,
that was it.
Seeing the stucco was it. And then when our daughter was in the Bluebirds, and I was the big bird that year, and so on my paint table in the studio, they had been making paper, but also there was some, the paper, the colored paper that you buy.
Construction paper?
Construction paper. And so one day I just picked it up and started tearing it and doing a collage, and I had never done one before. And I thought, I did one, and that was fun, so I did another one. And that started me on collage. So that was a pivotal thing. And then the collages started influencing my painting. And so this painting here is...
You can almost see that in that painting, in a way, the torn paper, that kind of thing.
And the collage that I did before that relates to this painting is in the dining room.
So in looking at Houston, looking back now,
mm-hmm.
50 years,
yeah.
Is there anything that stands out in your mind that is unique or was something that was... created more change or more thought or that was particularly interesting to you when you think back in the last 50 years?
I remember the moving of the CAA building out to the Prudential grounds where we all went down.
Did you all go down that night?
Yeah, and rode on the truck.
Oh, you rode on the truck?
I think so, as I remember, yeah. But that was sort of a wonderful time.
Well, I think it seems like you all enjoyed a great deal of camaraderie and mutual support. And did you sense any in the 50s and 60s when things were really kind of being nurtured and moving along and there was the energy of the CAA, but was there ever any sort of
proprietary or positions that artists would take where they would not be helpful to each other? Or was it just pretty much a fairly supportive group kind of moving on down the road?
I don't remember. We were friends, and so as far as supporting people, that...
You were friends.
Yeah, we were friends. And I don't think I ever knew of anybody working against anybody else.
I think people just got started and did their thing, don't you think? Like Ben DuBose, I mean, you just jumped into the pool and started swimming.
Yeah. And no acrimony that I ever knew.
No, people just... kind of that independence that's always been nurtured and cultivated in Houston, and that opportunity that if you wanted to try, you could get in there and try.
Yeah, and I think that's why all of the painters are so different.
You know, that's a good, no one's made that point, but it's true.
In the other cities, like Fort Worth and Dallas, there were schools of painting,
mm-hmm.
and there never was a school of painting. I mean, we went to the museum, but there was not a school of painting where you could tell that person was from, had gone to that school or that group.
Mm-hmm.
And, which I think is good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's characteristically Houston, Texas.
Yeah.